I have a couple of friends. Well, I'd like to think I have more than a couple of friends, but I've got a couple of friends in particular. And they run, believe it or not, a really successful global business consultancy firm. I know. And what they do is they help companies transform or change to take advantage of digital technology. Now, they never, ever even mention digital technology. Not to anybody, not to the firms they help. They never mention it, but their job is to help them transform so they can take advantage of digital technology. What they do is they help companies understand about the transformation of people, because that's the most valuable asset in any company. And it's too easy, they found, for companies to say, our guys can't do it, get rid of them, bring some new ones in. And often they're letting a whole load of talent walk out the door. So they help companies understand about the transformation of people. And they work on people's mindset, the way people are sort of geared and wired to think. And they work on helping people to change their outlook on things, their mindset on things. That's their job. And they're really, really good at it, if the results are anything to go by. And it's about enabling people who might not realize what their potential is. I think we prayed about this, helping people find the gifts and skills they've actually got. It might need a bit of honing or a bit more training, but they are there. And sometimes the turnaround in these companies, just by people having a different approach, a different mindset, is quite incredible. Now, this isn't a sales pitch for them. We certainly couldn't afford them. But what really interested me when I received an email from them this week was the title of the email. And that was it. Hope, a modern leadership imperative, ? Immediately, I was intrigued by that, because hope isn't one of the things I would have associated with sort of modern leadership theory and consultancy. So I read a little further, and there was the inevitable 3 points. Hope, apparently, it's oriented towards a future, it's grounded in the past, and it's sustained in the present. And I thought, that's business speak. But when I looked at it, it's actually pretty much what the Bible says. In fact, it's exactly what the Bible says, just in slightly different words. We'll come on to that in a moment. But clearly, hope is future-focused. We are hoping, we are expecting. But it is definitely grounded in things that have happened. We'll look at that a little later. And it is definitely sustained here and now in the present. And I thought, well, this is interesting. So this is management and business theory that's being used to help turn companies around by transforming people. I wonder what else they've got to say. And I did realize straight away, and this has happened to me a lot in business, they don't know this, well, they do now because I've told them, but they didn't know all they're doing is repeating what the Bible taught over 2,000 years ago, right back into the Old Testament through into the New, about hope and the importance of hope. They think they're onto something new. Loads of business ideas that come out. I was talking to people at the prayer meeting yesterday. When I was working in my previous job, there was a big new, from America, obviously. Big new, this is the biggest thing now. This is going to transform business and management. And the had conferences and all the banners came out. It's called, this is true, servant leadership. And they thought it was new. And fortunately, I was able to tell them, do you know where that's come from and who started all of that? They didn't. They were quite interested, but then they got on with the stuff. So I went on to look at some of the research behind this and whether there is any. And there is. And it was quite interesting. This is research that's been done by everyone from sort of technologists to psychologists, medics. That they're all at it. It's the next new thing. Hopeful people set more and higher goals and are more successful at achieving them than those who are not hopeful. Well, that's interesting. Put it another way, those who focus. Well, I'll tell you a story first. There's historians have been looking back at Christians, particularly Christians who've had a huge impact socially, who've been culture changers in all sorts of ways. And something, they're going back to sort of Victorian times and beyond, right back to when Christians really, well, they've been doing good stuff all the time, but real social change in this country. And many, many things came out. But one of the things was this. Those of them who had a hope beyond this life, they had a hope and an expectation, and they would say a certainty of their destination and their purpose. So those were the most successful in changing, radical social change that they went about. And that was an interesting link. And it made me think, you've maybe heard of that phrase, someone will say, you're so heavenly minded, you're no earthly good. Anybody ever heard that phrase? Yeah, a few have. Well, it's wrong. Because if you're rightly heavenly minded, you are definitely earthly good, because you know where you're going, you know what your purpose is, and you know what you've got to be about in this life. And that's what they found with these people who were very heavenly minded, but absolutely grounded in doing stuff as they've been called to do in the here and now. We need to be correctly heavenly minded to ensure that we are change agents of the kingdom here and now. That's part of our ministry. What else did I find? Hope is based on real world experience. Hope is based on real world experience. Now, I'm not sure what experiences they're referring to in their world, but I know in our world as Christians, that is definitely true. Our hope is based on our personal experience of Jesus and his promises. That's what our hope is built on. Our hope is built on nothing less than Christ. And our present day experience and our past experiences of Jesus and his promises and his faithfulness, they are what our hope is based on. I've no idea what theirs are. I might find out one day, but we know what ours are. Now, this one I liked. Hopeful leadership inspires. It inspires permission and protection. Permission to try and protection when we get it wrong. Now, Jesus is one of the most hopeful characters you could ever hope to know or to meet. And I think of the times when he sent his disciples out. He sent the 12 out. And they didn't always get it right, did they? Sometimes they got it wrong, but he had their back. He actually sent them out with authority, with permission. Get out there and try. Get out there and do it. And sometimes they came back and said, whoa, we saw the devil fall from heaven and all of that. And other times they came back and it wasn't quite so good. But Jesus had their back. They had permission to try and protection when they got it wrong. And that's really, really important. And Jesus was full of hope and expectation in his people. And he had right to be, because he knew who created us and he knew what he'd given us and who was in us. He knew all that. And he was hopeful always, in every circumstance, hopeful. Hope produces people who are change agents, not blown around by the winds of change. Not blown around by feelings, emotions, or circumstances. Hope produces people who are solid, and they know the sort of change agents that God, through Jesus, has called us to be. We know about the kingdom and what Jesus has called us to be in terms of kingdom workers, kingdom change agents. Despite our feelings, despite our circumstances, despite whether we're emotionally up or down at that time, that calling never changes, and hope produces kingdom change agents, because they're always living here but focused and expectant for the future, for better things. And then, nearly finished this, I found it fascinating. From the psychologists, of course, the psychologists didn't want to get left out, did they? So they had to have a go. So they have produced a list of the mental and psychological benefits of hope, of being a hopeful person. They've done tests, as they always do, on thousands of people. More positive emotionally. A stronger sense of purpose and meaning. Lower levels of depression and less prone to loneliness. They found all that out in people who are hopeful, who have a hopeful mindset, a hopeful disposition. We, of all people, Christians, should have that hopeful mindset, that hopeful disposition. Why? Because Jesus is the source of our hope. Our hope is on nothing less than Jesus' blood and righteousness. Who he is, what he's done, what he's doing, what he's promised. That's where our hope is. So we should be that lot on steroids, basically, because they haven't got any of that. They've got none of what we've got. So the roots of hope in a promise. I found this, I'm talking on hope, by the way. I found it really difficult because the Bible doesn't define hope anywhere. It doesn't sort of say this is what hope is. It just gives us loads of examples and scriptures where hope crops up, and we have to piece it together like a jigsaw. But here's a promise from Joshua 2 to a prostitute called Rahab. And there's a fascinating word in this. Quick recap. Joshua, that's the Old Testament, sent spies into the land, particularly into the city of Jericho. The spies were at risk of being caught, so a woman, this prostitute called Rahab, hid them and got them out of the city safely. So we pick up at Joshua 2:12. This is Rahab talking to the spies. Now then, please swear to me by the Lord, since I have dealt kindly with you, that you may also deal kindly with my father's household, and give me a pledge of truth, in other words, a promise, with my father's household. Spare my father and mother, my brothers, my sisters, and all who belong to them, and save our lives from death. So the men, the spies, said to her, our life for yours, if you do not tell this business of ours, and it shall come about when the Lord gives us the land, we will deal kindly and faithfully with you, Rahab. So Rahab let them down by a rope through the window, for her house was on the city wall. And she said to them, go to the hill country so that the pursuers will not encounter you, and hide yourselves there for 3 days until your pursuers return. Then after that you may go on your way. And the men said to her, we shall be released from this promise to save your family, unless, when we come into the land, you tie this scarlet cord in the window, and that will let us know, and we will save you and your family. That scarlet cord, that was the bit that stood out, and I looked it up. The Hebrew word is a word called tikvah. It'll mean nothing to most people, so when you look it up, that word means the ground for hope, the reason for hope. That's what that word means. So that scarlet cord, that tikvah, literally translated is the ground for hope. And it was her ground for hope, because that scarlet cord that she was told to put on that window represented a promise that those men made to her. And that promise was, if when we come back that scarlet cord is there, you and your whole family will be spared. And she put her hope in that promise. And that scarlet cord represented that promise. That was the ground of her hope. And that, for me, said it all. There's just so much imagery there anyway. But the ground for hope was the promise given. And our ground for hope is the promise and the promises that Jesus gives us. There's one in particular which we'll talk about towards the end. So that was Joshua. Now Zechariah 9. We'll flick through this. That's it. You'll recognize some of this. Zechariah 9, 9 to 13. Rejoice greatly, daughter Zion. Shout, daughter Jerusalem. See, your king comes to you, righteous and victorious, lowly and riding on a donkey, on the colt, the foal of a donkey. I will take away the chariots from Ephraim, the war horses from Jerusalem. The battle bow will be broken. He will proclaim peace to the nations. His rule will extend from sea to sea and from the river to the ends of the earth. As for you, because of the blood of my covenant with you, I will free your prisoners from the waterless pit. Return to your fortress, you prisoners of hope. Even now, I announce that I will restore twice as much to you. And that was the phrase that got me. You prisoners of hope. Now, your average human criminal is bound against their will by prison doors, or in some places, literally, ropes or chains. We, followers of Jesus, however, voluntarily bind ourselves to be people of hope, because Jesus said, we'll see the scriptures in a moment, we are quite literally prisoners of hope. And that's a good thing to be bound to. We are bound to be hopeful people. We cannot escape the need to be people full of hope because of Jesus' promises to us. Prisoners of hope. There'll be a question at the end about that. It's not a test. You won't get marked out of 10, but there's a question. So we have the story of Rahab and the red cord that bound her to the promise that red cord represented. And those men said to her, basically, there's going to be chaos in the city. No matter what chaos, no matter what destruction, no matter how frightened you are, you stay in your room where that red cord is and you will be safe. That's a strong promise for a strong hope. The Zechariah, prisoners of hope, is a strong promise for a strong hope. Let's look at some other scriptures. Most of this talk is going to be scriptures, by the way. Let God speak these into your heart. If this is for you, receive it. Jeremiah 14:42. Therefore, our hope is in you, Lord, for you are the one who does all of this. 2 Corinthians 3:12. Paul just says, he's been talking about stuff, but he says this line, since we have such a hope, we are very bold. Already we see hope getting associated with other words. Here's boldness and hope. Isaiah 40:31. Those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. There's the renewal of our strength and energy bound up again with this word, hope. Jeremiah 29:11. We'll all know this one. For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord. Plans to prosper you, not harm you. But he plans to give you hope. That's how important it was. Part of God's plans for his people back in Jeremiah, plans to give you hope. Hope is God-given. It's not something we generate ourselves. I'm in a good mood today. I think I'll be hopeful. I'm feeling okay. My circumstances are good. I think I'll be hopeful. It's not that. God gives us hope. It is literally supernatural, because God is expecting and enabling us to be able to hope and offer others hope in what the world might say are hopeless circumstances. Romans 15:13. May the God of hope fill you with all joy. Here's hope associated with joy this time. Boldness, strength, joy. If we go on, I'm not going to read all the scriptures in the Bible that mention hope. There's loads of them. But fruitfulness, strength, it's all there, bound up with this word hope. Hebrews 11:1. Hope expects what we have not yet perceived with our senses. Hope is reaching out, is reaching beyond, is seeing something in the future that's worth putting its trust in. The person who hopes never accepts that the current situation is the final one. Never accepts it. Hope is the practical outworking. It's a demonstration of our trust in Jesus and his promises to us. Hope is the practical outworking, a demonstration of our trust in Jesus. I don't know how much more of this I want to do, to be honest. The promise that's the key one for hope, and we've already mentioned it, where Jesus says, I will never leave you. I will never forsake you. And he says, I go to prepare a place for you. There is a place prepared for you and for me. And that is not pie in the sky when you die. This is real. And the people who know that hope, I believe, are the people who really understand the hope we're called to. So when Jesus says to us, whatever your circumstances, if he says that I've given you hope, he's not saying that hope will take you out of those circumstances. They might, but they might not. He might be saying, what I'm going to do is to give you strength and patience to bear up under those circumstances. He might often do that. He might even say, I'm going to bring you home. He might do that. But our hope is based on the promises of Jesus that he will do what he knows is best for us and the circumstances. So our hope is based on a promise we do not yet see, but we trust. In every circumstance, no matter what, no matter how it turns out, no matter how we feel, no matter what our emotions, this doesn't make any sense, by the way. This is one of those kingdom things that makes no sense. You sort of got to try before, you just got to say, okay, I'm in, Lord. I don't see how it works. It seems a bit silly to me to be like really downtrodden, but have hope. When there's no reason to hope, Jesus says, yeah, it's sort of the way the kingdom does things, but the world struggles with it a bit. Been there. There we go. Many people in this room have been there. Some might be there right now. And that's the problem I found doing this. I can't just turn to the Bible and say, this is what hope is and this is how you get it. Other than Jesus has promised. He'll be with us. Jesus has promised. And that's it. All we need to know for us to allow the God of hope to fill us with hope and boldness and joy and strength, no matter what. And I know it's easy to say, and just because it's God, it doesn't mean it's easy to do either. We're in there with him and he's in there with us. But can we pray to be people of hope? That the world would see, no matter what the circumstances, these people have hope. How's that possible? Because Jesus